Good evening. Welcome to the Salary Report. Today is April 20th, 2017. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. Events coming up. First, I want to mention the first quarter wrap-up. We're just working on the final PDF transcript, and we hope to have that up for you by early next week. It's a great tool for understanding what's going on in the U.S. and in Washington right now. The hard copy should be ready by May 1st. I really recommend you take a serious look at either the PDF or if you get the hard copy. It's a good one. Lunch with Catherine in Pasadena, May 6th. We've got a great crowd coming out, and then I'm going to be giving a speech at a wealth summit in Valencia on May 11th. You can see the link on the homepage and sign up if you wish. And then I'm flying to Louisville for a great celebration with Dr. Joseph Farrell. We just got another message from the organ master yesterday, and we're hoping to get pictures, so we'll have some pictures for you. They've put together the console, and now they're working on programming the virtual pipes. I'm headed to Australia in late May. I'll be there through June 18th, and then I head for the week of June 19th to Hong Kong for a week, and then for a week to Bangladesh, and then I fly back to the San Francisco Bay Area on July 1st, and I'm working on a lunch in the San Francisco Bay Area for Saturday, July 8th. Stay tuned. It's expensive. Woo. Anyway, the Australian Outback trip in May 2018 sold out very quickly. We've been building a waiting list, and so I finally went back to Richard Dolan and asked him if he would be willing to stay in the Outback and do a second group for a second week. So next week, we plan on announcing a second week for May 14th, 18th, and we're going to first invite the people on the waiting list to sign up, and then we'll make it open. And again, a lot of people, unfortunately, thought that it was May 2017, so they didn't think they could do it. Again, it's not this year, it's next year, May 2018. We put up a blog post, Get a Taste of the Salary Report. You can just do a search for it. Many of you ask how you can introduce friends and family to the Salary Report, and what we did is we collected an introduction to all the things you can get for free. There's a lot, and some of the great Salary Reports that we've made public, and they're a great introduction. And then finally, the prayers for 2017, we did a big print of those, so we still have plenty. They're free. Just email, call, or send a self-addressed stamped envelope to our P.O. box, and we'll send you one. Our theme tonight is neocon spring. The neocons are having a great spring as Trump does U-turns in both the Middle East and North Korea. I interviewed Saker, which we'll publish next week. I just interviewed him yesterday, and he points out we're attacking all the people who are taking out ISIS. Not a good sign. But we had a very in-depth discussion, and I recommend that to you. It really does look to me like David Rockefeller's death has redoubled the push for the 5 countries in 7-year plan. It's basically the central banking model, which is doubling down on central control, the war on cash, global digital currency. Unfortunately, they need the old nationalists and the young transparency buffs out of the way. And part of the problem is they've got falling margins on the multinationals, falling margins on natural resource extraction, falling margins on financial fees and spread. It's part of the impact of artificial intelligence and automation. Ron Paul said earlier this week, it would have been devastating for them if peace had broken out. They were in real danger of peace breaking out. What you're watching is the people who basically encouraged Trump to take many positions counter to the neocons during the election are really being forced out. So we see first Flynn goes, Bannon is under real assault and sort of cornered. Wouldn't surprise me if Peggy Noonan's editorial about him helped to sort of keep him in the White House, but he's clearly in retreat. There's jokes now on MSNBC that Kellyanne Conway's office is in the basement. And it's not a good sign because Trump's basically cutting off his own legs. But we also see it happening in the press with O'Reilly and Assange, which I'll talk just a minute. The problem with this is the clear main message to people is it's dangerous to support him in bucking the establishment. So he's cutting off his own legs before he's even tried to build bridges to the people who voted Democratic but would really support the Make America Great campaign. So if you look at the politics, he's really putting himself in a corner. But look at the media support for him. Bill O'Reilly is now out at Fox. Supposedly this was part of cleaning house because of his bad behavior in terms of sexual harassment. I doubt that's the reason. I think there are a couple of reasons to get him out, but most of them all tie back to the politics of not letting the Trump phenomena happen again and cutting the nationalist legs out from under. So this is really the neocons at work. I think the real big danger is that whole network is going to roll out 5G, and 5G is cell service, and they're really looking to significantly increase the entrainment mind control, and part of this is a push to get the millennials on board politically, because that's how they sort of pull the rug out from under the pro-national team. Fox is moving Tucker Carlson up. He's much more popular with the millennials and much less, sort of a much more inclusive style. Then CNN today reports that the U.S. is about to issue an arrest warrant for Julian Assange. My guess is Assange is sitting on a lot more pedophilia. And my advice to him is he better get it out fast. The establishment is very scared, and it's a pretty bad sign if they try and take out WikiLeaks, and it's something we don't want to see happen. And then Alex Jones has family court problems and is getting targeted by social media, has been for about 6 weeks, really cutting into his revenues. And if you look at the extent to which Alex Jones, Julian Assange, and Bill O'Reilly did tremendous things to help Trump get elected, the fact that they're all getting picked off while he's busy engaging in pro-neocon policies really tells you that there's a political IQ he's missing. Interestingly enough, Gallup now shows, as of yesterday, his polls at 43 approve, 50 disapprove. Looks like the war bump that he got is over. And the day before, the Economist survey showed Congress with 14% approve and 61% disapprove. The result is what's really happening is the establishment is carrot sticking him, sort of using carrots and sticks to put him into where they want him, and they found his sweet spot. And again, they keep moving to cut off his independent strength, and he's letting them. And so he's losing his base at the same time he's not building bridges, again, as I said, to the people who voted Democratic but want to make America great again. And so instead of building the bridges he needs to be building, he's cutting off his own base and not building those bridges. So he's going to end up very dependent on the establishment. New announcement from the administration that they will not publish White House visitor logs. That's very seriously bad news. And the reality is, if you look at the Washington media, they can see who's coming and going. They can get that intel. So you're giving a lot more power to the people who are trying to really bring you down. What's been happening is divide and conquer is succeeding for the establishment. For a president to get any big shift in policy, he needs a much higher approval rating and much bigger consensus in the country for any given policy or support. And so if you keep everything divided and conquered, that means you can't get anything through Congress or the Washington approval process without the establishment engineering it. So if they can engineer things through, but you can't get anything else without a big approval rating, then the divide and conquer makes sure that you can. And unfortunately, it's very sad, but Americans fall for it. I've been amazed at the Trump supporters who've been aggravated by the sound of the shriek-o-meter. And I keep saying, look, the sound of the shriek-o-meter is the Washington establishment losing, you know, their cash flows dropping as Trump does what you want. If you're not willing to ignore the shrieking, then they're going to control. Why would you concede them control? But we're doing it. Tax day came and went on Tuesday. I think it was very tough for Americans when their disapproval rating of their federal government is this low one way or the other. Also, if you look at the polls of is the country headed in the right direction, to dig deep and pay your taxes at this time is very painful. So you have to be, if you're paying your taxes, you're being honest when they're not. So, and again, you're producing a financial statement for them when they refuse to produce financial statements as required by law. Congressional recess is over. The spring recess is over on April 25th, and the debt limit fight starts on April 28th. This could mean really big fireworks. And now, it's funny, Stockman has given a couple of great interviews. I put one of them up on the website today. And he thinks the implication of him and other commentators is the banks and the banking systems are out of tricks. I don't think they're out of tricks at all. The reality is, I think the tensions here and the slowdown in the economy and the fundamental economics is part of why this 7 countries in 5-year plan that General Wesley Clark talked about. If you haven't seen that video, you really want to do a search for General Wesley Clark and listen to the plan to take out 7 countries in 5 years after 9/11. But I think they've revved that plan up. And if you look at the military costs of revving that plan up, it means the chances of the Make America Great Again investment are dying on the vine. Now, the president says this week that he's gonna resolve Obamacare first and then do tax reform. That's very tricky to do. There must be a reason that they believe they can do it. I don't know what it is, but I don't see how you get real tax reform by August, particularly if you're going to do Obamacare first. Although I do see, if you just wanted to do a quickie that brings back the corporate cash, that's relatively easy to do. The Secretary of Treasury, Steve Mnuchin, said this week in an open public videotape discussion, again, I put it up on the blog, that there's going to be big sweeping tax reform before the end of the year, and he appears confident that they have a deal. So that is very possible, but you're going to have big big consensus inside the establishment. The establishment's going to have to push it through. So let's see what emerges. As I said, Stockman thinks they're going to be so just grabbed by the whole debt limit discussion and inability to get a resolution on the debt limit that it's going to make it impossible to get a solution on both Obamacare and tax reform. I don't agree, but let's see what happens. It could go either way. Now, what does this all mean? What does neocon spring mean to you? What it means is that a great deal of money is going to go into the military machine, and as that happens, we're going to experience significant debasement of the currency. What that means is asset inflation, expense inflation. We're already experiencing it now, but it's going to accelerate. So we're going to get an accelerated squeeze to the middle class. It's just as I described in the annual wrap-up. And if you haven't read the annual wrap-up, I would encourage you to go back and do that. So there's going to be money for military, but not money for pension bailouts. And I think one of the reasons they're making such a strong push to get 5G out and to get political support from the millennials for, particularly for a centralized, controlled, cashless society, is that's how you really pull the rug out from under the boomers and just let them down hard over the financial coup. Now, how far this administration is going to go on prioritization and liquidation, it's still too early to tell if they're going to be that short-sighted. So the game is far from over, and I still think we're significantly better off than if Clinton had won the White House in terms of both foreign wars and what happens domestically. But this is trench warfare, and as I've said all along, if there's any message here, it's that we really have to get involved locally. This is real trench warfare, and ultimately it's going to be decided 3,100 counties, one county at a time. Somebody told me they got a survey in the mail this week, and then another person told me they were going to a town hall meeting, so I gave them the same agenda. Number one, tell your Congress critter to find the 11.5 trillion of undocumentable adjustments in HUD and DOD. If the $20 trillion of debt's going to be on the table, then we want the 11.5 trillion that disappeared in the assets that it financed back on the table. Second, we want audited financial statements as required by law. You know, why should we give them an honest statement on April 15th if they won't give us one back? Third, they should publish the federal budget by county. There's a commentary up on my website called Letter to My Congressman, and I strongly suggested you get it, make a copy, and send it to your congressman. But it's all about getting the data by your county so you can start to see money on a place-based basis. And finally, publish the federal contracting budget. What you're going to find, if you look at the federal contracting budget, is, you know, corporations are being paid $100 an hour to do something that somebody in your neighborhood could do by teleporting, you know, by telecommuting for significantly less. And we'd all be better off. So, anyway, find the missing money, produce audited financial statements, publish the federal budget by county, and publish the federal contracting budget. And for heaven's sakes, you know, whether you're going to a town hall meeting or you're surveyed or you're writing your Congress, just print out my letter to the congressman, change the name to your congressman and send it. Okay, money and markets. U.S. dollar now down 2.5% by the year. It's tiny bit, tad under the 100 line, but it's still hugging the 100 line. So I don't see a big change yet. Fixed income has come back much stronger. You know, it just shows you when people get nervous. So the long treasury ETF is up 4.35%, the intermediate up 2.4%, corporate bond aggregate up by 1.78%, and the high yield bond ETF up 2.67%. So long treasury outperforming the high yield bonds. Equities, the S&P now up almost 6% for the year. The home builders flying at 10.83%. We're seeing significant inflation on home prices around the country. I'm hearing it from all areas. The Vanguard Europe ETF up 8%, so outperforming the S&P. Germany up 7%, again outperforming the S&P. The developed markets minus North America up 7.28%. China large caps up 9.71%. China small caps up 11.58%. Everybody keeps predicting the demise and end of China, and it just keeps coming along stronger. And the emerging markets back, probably because the dollar traded off a little bit, at up 12.23% for the year. And then commodities weak, the commodities index down almost 5%. Gold and silver holding their own, gold up 11.27%, the silver ETF up 12.91%, and oil down 13.43%, just keeps staying in the doghouse. The first round of voting in the French elections is this Sunday. Now, this is just the first round. There's going to be another round with the runner off from the two who emerge. There's a real wrench that's gotten thrown in the mix. This was expected to be Le Pen versus Macron, but Jean-Luc Mélenchon, who is described as, it looks to me a little bit like the Bernie Sanders of France, but comes from the progressive side, is just shooting up tremendously in the polls. And it's going to be very funny because Macron is the the moderate candidate and that the establishment could live with. So if they end up with Mélenchon and Le Pen, it's going to be amazing. If you look at all the dirty tricks that have been thrown at Le Pen's sort of way, it looks like somebody's trying to get rid of her. And whoever that somebody is, they got a lot of tricks up their sleeve. So it looks quite a fight, because this is not just about who's going to govern France. It's about the future of the European Union and the euro. So this is quite an experience. I put up a checklist. I've been working with a variety of different situations and families and people. Finally decided I needed sort of a framework of risk to help discuss risk issues, because there's so many different risk issues coming at at families today. And there's so many different possible scenarios. It's really, how do you organize it and think about it in a very coherent, organized fashion? So I thought it would help me to put together a checklist, and I'll be talking a little bit about it in our equity overview this evening. One of the things, and I've put links to different interviews up, but I wanted to comment on a series of different interviews because there's a theme that you see. First was the Jamie Dimon interview I put up a couple weeks with in connection with his annual report, his annual letter with their J.P. Morgan Chase annual report. Jamie Dimon being the chairman of J.P. Morgan Chase. And then an interview Hillary Clinton did on why she lost the election. And then a videotaping of the head of Uber by a driver who challenged him on their policies towards a driver. Now, what you see in each one of these, Jamie Dimon is sitting there. Basically, what he said, first he wrote a letter. He said, something's wrong with America. But, of course, there's no connection to J.P. Morgan Chase's and Jamie Dimon's responsibility for what's wrong in America. It's amazing. And, you know, it's almost, you know, you kind of feel like this is a guy who has a memory wipe every hour. One person said to me, it's like watching somebody who's organized by artificial intelligence and has no mind. So in the interview, he's talking enthusiastically about how J.P. Morgan Chase wants to treat their customers like you would want your mother to be treated. Well, if you look at the history, if you listen to our interview with Helen Chapman or looked at her website of all the fines for criminal activity by J.P. Morgan Chase that's defrauded and harmed millions of people, it's just amazing. I mean, the extent of the hubris. And I'm telling you, the guy looks like he's had a memory wipe. But again, I think he's trying to pitch the young people. He's trying to pitch the millennials. And, you know, he's being cool these days. He's wearing jeans. And it's just endless. So then Hillary Clinton does an interview where she talks about why she lost the election. And not one item cited has anything to do with her decisions, her behavior, or anything about her. You just can't believe it. It's unbelievable. And then Uber, which is the most valuable private company in the country, or was, is literally falling apart. And one of the reasons is absolutely dreadful management. I put up a link to a wonderful article by an engineer who describes her experience working at Uber. And it, you know, you can really see what's going on. But anyway, it's a videotape that shows the Uber CEO getting a ride in an Uber car and then asking the driver, you know, his opinion, and the driver proceeds to tell him that he spent $97,000 on a car before, or investing in the operation before they changed the policies, and it wiped him out and bankrupted him. And the CEO just goes ballistic and runs away out of the car because, you see, he's incapable of accepting responsibility, let alone taking enough responsibility for the ecosystem and listening to his constituencies to figure out how to proceed. So, you know, he's willing to bully his way to the top, but he's not willing to do the hard work of really making a business go. It's quite remarkable to watch. What you're seeing are different variations of people who are incapable of taking responsibility and literally incapable of remembering what they did yesterday. You know, but they're very capable of trying to be extremely fashionable and appealing to the, you know, to the groups they're pitching. And you look at it, and it's almost like reality TV. It's like they're in a reality TV show, and they don't understand it's real. It's kind of scary. And the reason I bring it up, and I'll talk about it when I talk about the family risks in the equity overview, one of the things I'm really concerned about is with the very brief effort by Trump to start to bring accountability to Washington, and then to watch the complete inability of Washington or the neocon machinery to change or listen, What we're seeing, and it's not just in Washington, it's in the whole country. What we're seeing is an entire society that can't face reality and has an entire mind control machinery designed to keep it from seeing reality. And if you look at what's coming towards us in terms of changes in state budgets and in federal budgets, and then you layer on the 5G and some of the other, you know, sort of covert things going on, you're talking about a situation where, particularly in dense areas of the country, you know, we're really talking about significant parts of our society going mad together. And when you watch Diamond Clinton and the Uber CEO, you realize, you know, these people are not grounded in reality. And if we get into serious trouble here, how in the world are they going to lead anything? They're not. And it's a, you know, it's a problem a little bit you're seeing with Trump, because one of the ways he's playing, he's getting played, is, you know, this is a man who's got a lot of ambition, but as Peggy Noonan says, he's a little bit short on character here, and that's certainly what we're seeing between how he's handling Flynn and Bannon and some of these other situations. And that's not good, because everybody's going to get the idea. The problem with leaders like that, if they're incapable of taking responsibility, it's very hard to follow them. That's why, you know, if you look at some of the people at the in the Clinton administration who really do have the capacity to take responsibility and lead, I think Tillerson is one of them. You're going to see over time more and more flow going to them and through them, because people will tend to organize around them. So who can stay a Titanic Turner under pressure? That's the question. Our hero this evening is Clifford Carnicom. I've been answering a lot of questions this week on Global Spring, and I've been coming back to the interview we did with Clifford Carnicom in 2010. I still don't know anything better on the Global Spring phenomena. And if you go to his website, you see somebody over many years who's focused on very hard research, on getting the facts. He's operated with very little resources, but had a tremendous impact. So if you're considering anybody for donations, the Carnicom Institute to me is just a gem and very, very worthy of your consideration. He continues to do great work. Our movie this week is just a charming movie. If you want to really get charmed, Frank Capra, who I love, made a movie called Meet John Doe. He's very well known for his Jimmy Stewart Christmas Story movie, but Meet John Doe is a charmer. And one of the things it shows is about how people sell out the people trying to help them, because they fall prey to the shriek-o-meter and shriek-o-meter control and let themselves be tricked by the media. So it's a story about a hero who gets tricked by the, you know, the crowd turns against him because of the media, but ultimately comes back. But it shows you the dynamics exactly of what we're dealing with today. So, and it's very charming if you like oldies but goodies. So Meet John Doe, and you'll see a wonderful little story about the shriek-o-meter getting bested by the hero. Has a happy ending. Our interview today was the last part of the first quarter wrap-up. The first one we did was Clash of Civilizations, our theme. And as I said, the materials on helping you get perspective on what's going on in Washington the first 70 days of the Trump administration are terrific. What I'm going to do is talk through the first quarter performance in fixed income equities and commodities markets. Then I want to take the annual wrap-up scenarios that we did and talk about how they inform investment strategy. And I'm also going to use the checklist on family risk. So I would make sure as you listen that you pull up the web presentation for the financial markets in the first quarter wrap-up, but also pull up those scenarios from the annual wrap-up. They're excellent. So we were going to have Rambus Chartology. We like to co-locate that with the first quarter, with the quarterly equity overviews. Unfortunately, Rambus was scheduled, but had unexpected surgery. So we'll publish that when he's back in the swing. Okay, Ask Catherine. Thanks for a lot of great links, and we've been publishing a lot of them. The first comment is, "Oh my God, did you hear Ben Carson rooted through HUD and found half a trillion bucks missing?" The spin on this is funny. They're saying, "Oh well, it's just accounting errors." Well, how can you have, you know, 10 times your budget in undocumentable adjustments? You can't. But the spin is pretty funny to listen to. Hi, Catherine. You've often spoken of the possibility of money being sent off planet. While my beliefs expand to accepting the possibility of ETs, I can't understand why they would want money, especially money that isn't backed by anything. Is it just to control us? What am I missing? I'm assuming that in theory, they might want to have assets just for control purposes, but I'm also assuming that there's a currency exchange. So, for example, I just got back from Belgium and Netherlands. I didn't spend dollars when I was there. I converted everything into euros and used euros. Similarly, I'm assuming that when I say we get money, we get a lot of money, and that money translates into currencies that can work off planet. So if you look at what has been speculated as being the currency, I think it's if ETs exist, it's very probable that gold is a currency that works off planet. And that's one of the reasons that throughout history, gold has been considered money, because it works with whoever that group is. But there are other assets involved. One is slaves. One is people and animals for experimentation. That's what I think the animal mutilations are about. Water is one, and then also areas for transshipment and for use on this planet. So there's a variety of different assets that seems to be or may be part of the trade. So it's basically gold and assets is what I would think. But obviously, they're not taking dollars and spreading dollars out on Mars. That would only work if we had military capacity to force. You know, countries take dollars because we can force them to. So we would need the military capacity to take everybody on Mars to take dollars. Hello, dear Catherine. Do you suppose free tuition for college in New York State was done at least in part to keep from losing future tax base and revenue? Yes. If and when state and private pension funds begin to fail and reductions are implemented, do you think it likely property taxes in lower tax states will be raised to be comparable to New York, other higher tax states? All of that really depends on what the unfunded liability of the individual states are. So Tennessee has very low unfunded liabilities. I don't think their liabilities are going to be raised to fund pension fund shortfalls in California or New York. So no, I don't think the property taxes in the states that are fully funded are going to rise comparable. Now, how the unfunded liabilities compare to their current low taxes, you really have to look at it state by state. But I don't think if generally the low tax states have done a better job of funding liabilities. Hi, Catherine. Recently, I thought I heard you say if 5G moves into your city, move. Seattle is one of the test cities. What is it about 5G that you don't like? Could you elaborate? There are three things. EMF radiation. Jason Bowden-Smith talked a little bit in the great interview we did about EMF radiation, about what the dangers. I'm going to be down with him in Sydney, Australia in May and early June. And I'm hoping to learn more and possibly get him to do something on 5G. The second thing is entrainment. I think 5G will give them the ability to be much more invasive in terms of entrainment in the general population. Finally, you have 3D hologram technology that can go with 5G. I think that gives you the ability to do a lot more with virtual reality and do it in a way that will help you stage false flags and all sorts of other events, and will even let you weaponize the population if you do a search for Chuck E. Cheese brawls. Please watch, if you haven't, The Kingsman. Not a movie I love, but it shows you the technology. Or there's another one with John Cusack called, I think, Cell or The Cell. But I'm very concerned about using cell technology as weaponry. And I think it's very, very dangerous. So, if there's anything you need to make sure you're healthy and wealthy, it's your mind. And anything that really impairs the functioning of your mind or impairs your health is, to me, a great concern. Next question. Amazing. Guess who Ivanka Trump's best friend is? Fact, not conspiracy. Huma Abedin. This will explain Donald Trump's apparent insanity during the past week. Thanks to Ivanka, Trump was about to be removed from office unless he went along with the war plans. Another, this is a breakthrough. These are facts, not conspiracy theories. I would just warn you, don't fall down the Ivanka did it rabbit hole. It's New York City is a small world, and everybody knows everybody else. So, and clearly Ivanka is somebody who's extremely social and has been extremely social her whole life. So, I think Ivanka, the impact of Ivanka and her husband, Jared Kushner, is way exaggerated. And I assure you, whatever Donald Trump does, Donald Trump is responsible for. And, he's not being handled and told what to do by his 30-something daughter. I just think that's being unfair to both. And, do I think that the establishment has used a variety of carrots and sticks to back Trump into where they want him? Yes. But I don't see that as coming through Ivanka. Okay, I guess Trump has forgotten about his promise to inner-city kids plate at the moment. There's an article, New York City black kids die many times at a much higher rate than other children. No, I don't think Trump's forgotten his promise. The problem is going to come when you hit the budget. And basically, if he's gearing up the war machine, that's going to shove everything else. So the statistics you sent me are very long-term statistics. The big challenge that is the Trump administration is going to face is the red button problem. And that does get into the inner cities, because you're talking about taking big drug profits out of those neighborhoods and mortgage fraud out of those neighborhoods. And if you're going to turn that around, you need the American people to support you in turning that around. And if you understand the red button problem, I'm not sure that the general population is prepared to support the president in turning that around. So I think it's very wrong for us to point a finger at Trump when the red button problem is from sea to shining sea. So I think, the most important thing is to look in the mirror and say, would you push the red button? Now, if you're a subscriber to the Salieri Report, the answer is probably yes. But we need to get 80% of the American people to agree with us on that. Catherine, I don't know how we can do it, but people like you and Steve Pachesnik and others cannot continue to suffer the likes of Carry the Space case of Camelot or Alex the Spaz. They're totally unprofessional, and citizens of this country must come up with a new media platform. I don't have the answers, but Cynthia McKinney probably does. Thank you for all you do. Actually, we have come up with a new media platform. Pachesnik has his site. I have my site. The more the flow grows to those sites, the more people like Pachesnik and I can do. It's all a function of revenues. The more that flows to us, the more we can do. I'm going to give a compliment to Jones and Cassidy now. So I think that the greatest sin is material omission. And Carrie Cassidy and Alex Jones have both done a lot to basically bring transparency to all the areas of the greatest material omissions. Now, I don't necessarily, their style is not my style. Their approach is not their approach. I have a much higher filter on information, and I'm much more interested in information and helping people sort of navigate reality. I'm not into entertainment, and Jones is, and Cassidy to a certain extent is, much more than I am. So, but different people have different styles, and there's room for everybody. It's interesting, Pachesnik did a big plug for Alex Jones, because Jones has really been taking it from social media, and now in the family courts and from the corporate media. So Pachesnik put out a plug for Alex, and I put the video up on the website. It'll be up tomorrow. So I'm kind of a supporter of both Jones and Cassidy. And that's why I did the interview with Cassidy. A number of people sort of sent criticisms of me for doing that. But I really, really think that there are people in this world who are lying, cheating, and stealing. And then there are people who are trying to do something about it. And I'm here to help the people who are trying to do something about it. I think we ought to reserve our criticism for the people doing the lying, stealing, and cheating. And, you know, Jones and Cassidy have dug out a lot that helps us figure out and bring transparency to the people lying, stealing, and cheating and why they're behaving where they're behaving. So their style is not my style again, but, I'm for them. And I do think we have a new media platform. All we have to do is grow it, and it's a matter of more and more people coming into it and supporting it. Let's see. Somebody sent me a great video on gaming technology. The Trump Zone, interesting in part for the gaming technology and control. Trump has to have vast knowledge of the technology and control. Yes, I agree. And it's one of the things that has always concerned me about Trump, because if you look at the extent to which very powerful technology is used to get people addicted to gambling, it's very frightening. If you haven't read the interview, we did two book reviews, one on gambling addictions, in essence, this very topic, and one on pornography addictions. And they're both very, very frightening, and I absolutely think it's a plan. I think Trump came out of an inner industry that used it, and between reality TV shows and casinos, he has to be exceptionally knowledgeable about that technology. Catherine, in trying to apply scenario thinking to the future possibilities of precious metals, I keep running into Harry Dent's persistent predictions that gold will go down to 700 or possibly 400, and that is that now is the time to get out. Although I see the likelihood that precious metals will get sucked down in the not unlikely case of a severe credit crunch, all the fundamentals, including continuing market manipulations by the Fed and banks, would seem to push it onward and upward. I appreciate Dent's contributions to the economic effects of demographics, but what do you make of his alarmist predictions for precious metals? What do you see as the likelihood of a severe credit contraction, of PMs being taken down and staying down? Any other reasons for a collapse in PMs? Any sense of how to prepare for these possibilities beyond having some capital to take advantage of them? There are many different possible scenarios, and I'm going to talk about this in the equity overview, but the first reason, and I've always been worried that if the dollar got very, very strong, we could consolidate down to, you know, the 700 level. I think we're in a long-term bull market. I've said there's an 80% chance we are, and that we just have to finish consolidating, and I've been very impressed at how gold has held the 1100 line. We haven't gone down into that 700 scenario. Now, there's still a chance we could get a very strong dollar scenario, but given the way Trump is and the military machine are going, I think the chances have been reduced dramatically from a year ago when I was very worried about this. But we could finish the consolidation down and before returning to the bull, and that could take us down to 700 if you look at the technical analysis. The second thing is, if we get a complete financial collapse, gold, you'll be very glad you have gold, but, you know, who knows what the price will be. Now, if the price is 400, but, you know, a loaf of bread is a penny, then it's all relative. So everything's going to go down in a collapse. Gold may not go down as much. But finally, I think the big danger is if they get total central control and get everybody in the central banking warfare or the central banking model and literally are able to turn society cashless, everybody chipped with digital currency, Then gold, the gold system is going to be entirely another paper system, and the price is going to be whatever they want it to be. So if you go to a controlled, centrally controlled digital currency with cashless, with everybody chipped, then price means nothing. All bets are off. So that's why I say the important question here is not as what the price of gold is. The important question is, are we going to live in a human and in human society? Because then you're talking about a slavery society. You're talking about a very different situation. But in that case, gold could go to 400. I would say that I'm much more worried about serious debasement and asset inflation scenarios at this point, given the way that Trump's going. So, but I would underscore all scenarios are possible, and that's why it's very important to be prepared to deal with tremendous price volatility in all the different asset categories, and stay very balanced in your approach. And I continue to be a buyer and holder of a core position. So if you haven't read my commentary on the website, what percentage of my assets should I hold in precious metals? I strongly recommend you read that because it still applies. And then they finish. By the way, thanks for the excellent daily upgrades in the blog news section. I now depended on it for my main source of what's going on that matters. Kudos to you and your diligent newsmen. Boy, are our newsmen diligent. We have two wonderful people doing top picks. They do a fantastic job. And they're always scouring the news. We're trying to find more stories about local success. Anyway, continuing gratitude and blessings to you, your staff, and your interviewees. Well, thank you very much. Then, have you checked out USA Facts? USA Facts was inspired by a conversation Microsoft Steve Ballmer had with his wife. She wanted him to get more involved in philanthropic work. He thought it made sense to first find out what government does with the money it raises. Where does the money come from and where is it spent? Whom does it serve? And most importantly, what are the outcomes? Very similar to your efforts. I think I've posted USA Facts up on the website and I've been trolling around playing with it, trying to understand it. I have more to do, but I think it's fantastic. So now you're starting to see enough people, a critical mass of people, get interested in saying, well, where is all the money going and what is it really doing and how do we make it work better? And there's nothing more powerful. That's why, again, if you go to town hall meetings, if you write to your congressman, if you answer surveys, use my answers that I just gave earlier. Then another person writes in and says, so what are the chances of hot war at this time? I wrote back, I said, depends on what you mean by hot. Chances of significant increase in ground troops in Syria, 25%. Nuclear war with North Korea, 5%. Nuclear war with Russia, 1%. People in Congress and Washington having each other killed or impacted violently, 90%. It's not funny. I'm not laughing. I hate to see people get killed. But I definitely think, AKA, you saw a professional hit taking out a DNC staffer, probably connected to the WikiLeaks last year. So I think we're going to see assassinations and killings and poisoning and other very dirty tricks in Washington for the next couple of years. One thing I would note is you see Chinese reports that the Chinese have moved 150,000 troops up to the North Korean border, and now there are reports today that Russia is moving troops up to their part of the North Korean border. To me, that's to prevent immigration. If you listen to the great interview we did with Professor Kelly Greenhill about immigration and immigration as a weapon, of course, one of the dangers is North Korea. If China doesn't do what North Korea wants or Russia doesn't do what North Korea wants, North Korea just sends a million people across the border. So it wouldn't surprise me if part of this warfare is weaponizing the population. Thank you for the Solari report. As a 70-year-old retiree, I do not feel qualified to voice opinions, but I do have several questions. My twofold questions regards the role of Israel both here and globally, and then the simple aspect of opportunity clouded in misdirection. Regarding black budgets and funding of wars, I do not see much analysis of how natural disasters, Haiti, or man-made disasters or economic disasters are seen as opportunities, as a model of creating personal wealth, to be spread around to members of a group. It feels like a shell game where the money never moves. If you haven't read Naomi Klein's book, Disaster Capitalism, I think she does a great job. But I think also Michelle Chanadovsky has a couple of books that also do a great job at that. So I think there's a lot of good material around on that topic. I worked in Afghanistan, Pakistan, and India for 35 years and saw it firsthand. Contracts flowed through USAID, and it was illegal to divulge the terms of contracts awarded. It's hard to wrap your head around the Clintons swooping down on Haiti as an opportunity to collect money in D.C. The same goes for wars in Iraq, Afghanistan, and the Middle East, or Africa, and South America. It's absolutely true, although some of the wealth is they pick up rights and control and ownership of natural resources. So that is place-based, if you will. But I'll never forget, you know, one great article about the Mexican bailouts in 1995 about how the money never left J.P. Morgan Chase. It just went from one account to another account to another account back to the other account. It was just like a round trip within 40 Wall Street. Then a second topic that rarely sees the light of day is the role of Israel in the Middle Eastern dictatorship, seeing war and misery as necessary for survival. You explain all of the above in a way that we have to read between the lines to get a glimmer of a very basic truth. We Americans are guilty of mass crimes against humanity. Yes, that's true. New York, D.C., Hollywood, Silicon Valley, mass media, and I would add sports, encourages us to cheer them on. Yes, that's true. That was a very important insight you brought to the discussion. You might create a term like Mr. Global to describe it. I think I did. I noticed Saker recently taking on the elephant in the room. I hope you'll discuss this in more detail next time you meet with him. Saker wrote an article basically saying that a lot of this was a Zionist phenomena. Now, I'm not inclined to beat the Zionist drum, but I do think it's a piece of the puzzle. In my experience, it's a big planet. You have lots of different groups competing. To me, the 800-pound gorilla in the room is not the Zionists. It's basically, you know, what is the story about the ET phenomena? Is it disinformation? Is it information? Does it relate to a separate species? You know, there's something going on that is highly weird. And to me, that's the 800-pound gorilla in the room, and you can't solve this thing by blaming it all on the Zionists. There's no doubt Israel wants to be the hegemon in the Middle East, and they're very aggressive about it. They traditionally have done a lot of the covert jobs and been the bad guy for the U.S. and Brits, so, you know, the Brits and the U.S. can look like James Bond or, you know, various kinds of good guys, and the Israelis can be the bad guys. The genocide of the Palestinians is very ugly business, but it's certainly not more ugly than the genocide of the American Indians or the African-American slave trade that the U.S. and Brits did. So, you know, there's no doubt the Israeli lobby in Washington is just dreadful and overpowering. And if you look at Netanyahu's treatment of the American president, it's just was so over the top, not to be believed. So I'm not a big fan of Israel, but I think the 800-pound gorilla in the room is the story of what is happening off-planet. Where is all the money disappearing to? It's basically the black budget, not you know, oh, the Zionists made me do it. Debasement, war, and organized crime. The G7 nations are financially dependent on these things. And that's the question. How do we get out of that dependence? There was a fantastic article by I keep quoting the German finance minister, Wolfgang Schwabel. He's great. I've got to, you know, someday I'd love to get this guy on the Salary Report. He's a little busy now, but he had a great editorial in the journal today on what we should be building in the Western countries is resilience. You know, which is a very euphemistic and very polite way of saying we need to kill our addiction to debt, crime, and war. We need to build real economic resilience. Dear Catherine Austin Fitz, as a former ROTC student in college in the U.S. and 72 years of age, and an independent American researcher for over 40 years, as well as being 5 feet away from President Kennedy when he arrived at the Hyannis Airport after winning the nomination for president, I treat your output as one of my fundamentals in analyzing today's events. I've worked retired to Ireland for the last 16 years and smiled when you and Carrie mentioned how humane folks are over here. It's one of the reasons I retired to the Republic of Ireland. However, my question is about contemporary Chinese society, since Catherine studied Mandarin Chinese at the Chinese University of Hong Kong. Because I was raised in the U.S. in the 40s, 50s, 60s, and I've listened intently to all of Dan Collins, his website, the China Money Report, interviews on China, and see a similarity in how the U.S. was built up in my youth and how China is going through it now. My question is, since I won't have a problem learning Mandarin, what would you suggest I focus on? For example, I already know if I were wealthy, I would have a home on Hainan Island. I'm not sure what you're driving at for the question, but I would say the per capita convergence of East Asia with the G7 nations and the investment being made on the space race in China and in Asia, including India, are some of the biggest long-term trends in the equity markets. And as long as you're prepared for the extraordinary volatility, I would say it's one of the deep and positive trends in the equity market. And you need a lot of patience and you need a lot of ability to deal with volatility. But it's one of the reasons I'm headed to Asia. I'm in the process. We won't announce it till later this year, but I'm in the process of developing the screen for the Solari World Hedge Portfolio. And it's going to be a world fund. And one of the things I really want to look at is how do you, where in the equity market to invest to take care of those two trends? We've been spending a lot of time developing our lists of space companies, and we'll be, when we launch our new website, that'll be accessible to you. That's an update from last year's annual wrap up. And then someone else brought again the wonderful USA facts that Steve Ballmer has set up. And again, I would say, if you find all this interesting, just pull up that commentary on the website, my letter to my congressman, and print it out and cross off my congressman's name, put in yours, and send it to them. Because that's how we get real resolution. If you get every community in America looking at all the opportunities to reengineer the money in a way that makes the money significantly more productive and in a way that creates employment, that's part of what we need to do to really turn this around. And it's got to be done one county at a time. You cannot do it from Washington. Okay, that's it in closing. Next week, great interview with the Saker, the emerging multipolar world, the U.S. U-turn in the Middle East, and very detailed. We really chewed through it. Very detailed analysis. We also look at North Korea. Then May 4th, Bitcoin 101 with Sarah Wiesner. Wonderful, wonderful member of the team at the Tel Aviv Bitcoin Embassy. And the correspondent I have, who I most trust to answer my questions about Bitcoin, I finally said, Sarah, you have to do a Solari report. So I'm very excited she's agreed. Then a great interview with Rob Kirby on interest rate swaps. We talked about the Exchange Stabilization Fund, and the next step is then to talk about interest rate swaps and really how we've engineered this incredible fall of interest rates. It's a very detailed discussion about something that's very important to the financial system and hardly anybody knows about. And then May 18th, finally, because I've gotten many requests to do this, Junius Ricardo Stanton joins me to talk about Edward Bernays. And what we did is we each chose five big lies of the 21st century to come up with 10 big lies that demonstrate the Edward Bernays propaganda techniques, Bernays being called the father of propaganda. Fascinating discussion. Junius has been talking about and blogging about Bernays on his website and has the most wonderful understanding of what are the important big lies. Junius can always nail it. He can always spot the big lie a mile away. So a great lineup. Again, the Saker, then Sarah Wiesner, then interest rate swaps with Rob Kirby, and then Junius Ricardo Stanton. So, ladies and gentlemen, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, you need to start one. Good night and good luck.